Welcome back. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Laura Weens. Folks, if you haven't already, check out our website, www.theunionedge.com. We are having an exciting event in Grand Rapids, Michigan on September 23rd. It's a listener appreciation event. We'd love for you to join us for it. Cocktail hour event. We'll have live music with the AFM over there. And if you're in the Pittsburgh area, you can join us on October 8th. We're going to be celebrating Mike Stout's album release event, Mike Stout and the Human Union, his album Blue and Green in Black and White. We'd love to have you join us for that as well. Both of those things you can find on our website. Again, that's www.theunionedge.com. But joining us right now, we have Barry Craig from Kentucky. He's from the Kentucky Labor Institute and the Western Kentucky AFL-CIO. Welcome back to the program, Barry.
Always good to be back.
It's good to have you, and there's a lot of stuff happening around the legislative races in Kentucky. I know that folks tend to get blindsided or maybe too preoccupied with the presidential races, but really these down-ballot races are just as important, if not more so, and there's not very many places where this is more important or more true than in Kentucky. So talk to us a little bit about what's going on with that.
You're absolutely right about that. A lot of people don't know, perhaps, that Kentucky is the only southern state in which the Democratic Party holds a majority in a chamber, and that is our House. It is 53-47 Democratic. It is the only thing standing between our state and a right-to-work law and repeal of prevailing wage and a rollback of every gain unions have made in Kentucky since the New Deal. The governor of Kentucky, Matt Bevin, is an arch-conservative, Tea Party conservative, despises unions. That's also true of his lieutenant governor, Jeanine Hampton. The Republicans control the Senate 27-11, very, very strongly anti-union. And so when it gets down to it, we've got one firewall left, one ditch left, and that is the Democratic House. Now, the Republicans have been bragging about flipping the House, as they call it, for a number of years now. And they're going to try it again, obviously. They're going to spend a lot of money. They have targeted 10 Democrats they consider to be vulnerable. I talked to one of these vulnerable Democrats, and he kind of laughed and said he didn't think that the Republicans would knock off any of them. Interestingly, on this list of these 10 Democrats are conspicuously not the names of three Democrats who won special elections back in March, which enabled the Democrats to hold the House: Jeff Taylor of Hopkinsville, Chuck Tackett of Georgetown, and Lou Nichols of Greenup. Now, you know that if you are elected to office, your most vulnerable election is the first one after you win. And apparently the Republicans, now they do have opponents in these races, apparently the Republicans think that these three guys are sitting pretty. So, again, the number one priority of the Kentucky labor movement is holding this House. And I assure you we're going to be working hard to get the turnout out. The Kentucky Democratic Party Chair Sandy Overly will tell you that the labor union support was key to winning these three House races. So will the Speaker of the House, Greg Stumbo. He will tell you the same thing. I assure you labor will not be caught asleep at the switch here, and we'll be working extremely hard to make sure that that House stays Democratic.
Well, and I you make a very good point about these special election Democrats, too. I think it's really, it says that you guys really stepped up to the plate for good candidates if they're not vulnerable in this race. They've just come into power recently, but voters are satisfied enough with them that they're not going to be people whose seats are competitive in this fall election.
Well, of course, here again, as we've said many, many times, the only election that counts is the one on election day. These polls don't count. But, again, I think that speaks volume. And going back to these special elections back in March, there was great fear on the part of many people that the Republicans would run the table and win all four of these. And the Democrats won three out of four. I think that indicates there's considerable buyer's remorse against this extremist governor and his running mate who were elected last November. You know, Charles and I have talked about this many, many times about buyer's remorse. The best way to avoid buyer's remorse is don't buy the product. And I think that Bevin's extreme unpopularity, he has gone after unions, he's gone after public education, he despises the very idea of public education. He's all in favor of these private charter schools for homeschools and the usual right-wing anti-education agenda. And I think that's going to bode well for Democrats in the fall. Kentucky is a conservative state, but it's not reactionary. And I think we're confident that Governor Bevin, Matt Bevin, will be defeated for re-election when he comes up 3 November from now.
Well, and we should just point out that it's not just buyer's remorse. I mean, there weren't enough buyers as part of the problem. Is that
exactly
how many
right.
people actually voted in that election to guarantee his victory?
You're absolutely right about that. It's something less than 31% of eligible voters went to the polls in this very important election. And if you break that down, it's something like 16% of eligible voters put this man in office. Yes, turnout is the absolute key in these. Of course, as you know, turnout is usually lower in off-year elections, much higher in presidential elections. But you're absolutely right about that. Now, having said that, had the general public in Kentucky voted like union members, Jack Conway would be governor of Kentucky. So unions turn out, and unions have tremendous influence, although relative to the general population, our numbers are fairly small. We do vote. We do vote.
Absolutely. And I think that, so I think it's important to, yes, to remind folks that union members do come out to vote, but the folks that also sat at home on election day for those off-year elections when Governor Bevin got in should feel just as culpable for his election because
you're absolutely right about
there
that.
Were so few people that did vote.
Absolutely right about that. And this is of course, it's an issue nationally, historically. We Americans vote in smaller numbers than citizens in any other industrial democracy. How do you get people out to vote? I don't know how. And again, if you could figure that out, you'd win a Nobel Prize. But that is one thing. Turnout is going to be is key. We're the state AFL-CIO executive board will be meeting in early September, and I assure you that the elections will be a number one priority, number one topic of conversation. But we will not be caught asleep at the switch. We know. We absolutely know what's at stake here, and we're going to act accordingly.
Well, and I think that, you know, one of the ways that people vote is if their voting rights aren't attacked. And I think we've seen in state after state where there have been, legislatures and governors that have an extreme reactionary right-wing agenda. They have been trying to roll back voting rights for, people of color, people that are poor, people that are union members, people that are old.
These are neo Jim Crow laws, and these are being passed by right wing Republican legislatures. Now, back many years ago, it was right wing segregationist white supremacist Democratic legislatures that did that. Very different Democratic Party today, and a very different Republican Party today. I'm quite sure if you go to Springfield, Illinois, this afternoon, and get really close to Lincoln's tomb, you'll hear him spinning in his grave over what has become of his party. The party of Lincoln and Liberty is now the party of Donald Trump.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I saw Reverend Barber speak, and he spoke famously too at the Democratic National Convention a couple weeks later about how that is the rollback on voting rights is one of the biggest issues of our time that is not being talked about enough. Because if we cede these states, particularly the states in the South, to the voter ID legislation, restrictions on who can come to the poll, what kind of
You remember
same day legislation registering and things like that, we lose.
And you remember in your home state of Pennsylvania that lawmaker who got up and bragged about how they were stacking the deck in favor of Mitt Romney. So it's all across the country. And again, this goes all with Donald Trump. You can trace his rise all the way back to the Southern strategy of Richard Nixon in the 1960s. Donald Trump, the Republicans created Donald Trump. They can run away from him all they want. They can distance themselves from him all they want. But he is their creature. They created him. He's their Frankenstein. And they're going to have to live with this. God help us if we have to live with him. I can't believe that the American people elect him. My wife just got back from a month in Europe, and Europeans are horrified, rightly so, at the prospect of a Donald Trump presidency.
Absolutely. So we're going to have to take a quick break, Barry. But when we come back, I want to talk more about what kind of legislation we could expect to see if the legislator turns Republican in Kentucky, because I think that there are a lot of dangerous things around that as well. But we've been speaking with Barry Craig. He's of the Kentucky Labor Institute and the Western Kentucky AFL-CIO. I'm Laura Weens, and you've been listening to The Union Edge.
It's been two decades since President Bill Clinton signed a bill purported to end welfare as we know it, and a new report takes stock of the success of welfare reform. The law replaced the cash assistance entitlement for poor families and children with the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF, program. The Center for Community Solutions spoke with Ohioans involved in the debate at the time to see if the new program helped people become more self-sufficient and reduce dependence on assistance. President and Executive Director John Corlett explains there were some common themes.
There's a lot of disappointment that much of the energy and enthusiasm that was around 20 years ago has really disappeared. They really felt like there's a lack of statewide advocacy around these issues, that we're just not paying enough attention to what's happening in the lives of these children and their families.
The findings also note that poverty is actually higher in Ohio now, up to nearly 16% in 2015 compared with about 10% in 1999. Corlett says advocates in the report were also surprised the TANF caseload dropped as much as it has, down to just a few thousand adults in Ohio. He said it raises concerns there are many families still not able to make ends meet who still could use assistance.
That's concerning because we know that providing assistance to families, particularly with children who are living in deep poverty, can pay long-term benefits in terms of stabilizing those families, helping those children do better in school, improving their health.
Corlett contends changes are needed, particularly at the federal level, to allow greater investment in education and training for those receiving assistance.
The jobs that are going to pay well, that are going to allow someone to support their family and their children, require greater education and training. It makes sense that we would use these resources to invest in those good jobs and let people lift themselves out of poverty.
He adds that poverty has slipped from the nation's radar, and given the 20th anniversary of welfare reform, it's time for a renewed focus on how to better help families in need. This is Mary Sherman, Ohio News Connection.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
You wanted to be a teacher when you were little, but you grew up and things changed. Well, it's time to put it back on your list. Innovative things are happening in teaching today, and you can be a part of it.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if it gets a little uncomfortable, but how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is more important than your life? Someone who takes their eyes off the road while speeding along in a 3-ton hunk of steel. Freaky, right? Well, why not just ask them to stop? Or better yet, volunteer to text for them. It might be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hey, this is Charles Showalter, host of the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I want to talk to you about an organization I'm proud to be part of, the Union Veterans Council. My friend, Will Fisher, runs the program. Will, he's a Marine and a member of the Painters Union. Will and the Veterans Council bring folks together and advocate for issues that are most important for veterans, especially the need for good jobs and a strong, fully funded, fully staffed Veterans Administration. Additionally, the Union Veterans Council works to remind folks that attacks on workers are attacks on veterans. Veterans and workers are one and the same. When vets like myself get out of the service, they're looking for a good family-supporting job. That's a union job, and the Union Veterans Council is the tip of the spear in the lead for these fights. In short, the Union Veterans Council stands for a better life and fights for those who have fought for us. You can learn more about the Union Veterans Council at www.unionveterans.org. That's unionveterans.org. This Veterans Info Minute is sponsored by the NFL Players Association, nflpa.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Laura Weens. We're joined again by Barry Craig of the Kentucky Labor Institute and the Western Kentucky AFL-CIO. Welcome back, Barry.
Good to be back.
So you had talked before the break a little bit about how these down-ballot elections in Kentucky in the legislature are of critical importance to union folks. So, you know, we like to say that we're talking to the not yet union public, and sometimes there's a lot of insider baseball around terms like right to work and prevailing wage. Oh, sometimes I have some prevailing rage too, but prevailing wage.
Yeah.
So what would it mean for right to work to be passed or for prevailing wage to be repealed in Kentucky?
Well, it's very simple. Wages would go down, as many years ago, the Kentucky State AFL-CIO had a bumper sticker that said, union wages buy more. And that's absolutely true. And if you look at these right-to-work states, wages much, much lower than in non-right-to-work states. The same as prevailing wage. You give her a prevailing wage, that starts a race to the bottom among contractors, and you will also see the quality of the work go down considerably. Other issues, the Republicans have their sights set on the workers' compensation program. Does workers' compensation apply only to union members? No, it applies to all workers, and the Republicans would love to gut that program. We have a state OSHA program. Does that affect only union members? No, it does not. It affects all workers. They want to weaken that. So basically, it's an attack on workers across the board that you will see. Other issues of importance, public education in Kentucky. Governor Bevin and his running mate, Jeanine Hampton, constitutionally detest public schools. He homeschools his children. They're all for vouchers, which, of course, would drain precious funds away from public education. I'll give you a personal example of that. My wife taught school at Mayfield High School for 36 years, and she retired early than she wanted to, because she was afraid of the mischief that this man and the Republicans would work with her pension. Did she want to retire? Absolutely not. She loved teaching, taught senior English, loved it, but she thought, I'm crazy to risk the possibility of the Republicans taking over the House and then just destroying public education in this state. The other issue, voter suppression, we talked about that before the break. I think you would see something in Kentucky along the lines of what's going on in other states as well. So it's going to be an all-out assault on the working class, not just workers.
Yeah.
And not just economic issues.
Well,
it's education as well.
Well, in education, you're talking about your wife deciding to retire early for fear that they would attack
the
benefits.
She's not the only one either.
Absolutely. And I think, it's very clear that you're not going to attract the best and the brightest talent for our public education system if you start attacking the benefits that they receive.
You're absolutely right about that. And my wife has talked about this, and I've talked about it with other people as well. You know, back when I was young, and that was a long time ago, I'm 66, you say, well, you go to work for some government, some level of government, the city government, state government, federal government. You won't make a whole lot of money, but you've got really good benefits. Now they're destroying those benefits. So you're absolutely right. Who are you going to attract for this? And that's a long-term issue. As I said, the Republican Party has gone from conservative to reactionary. The Republican Party, as it stands now in the United States, in Europe, would be a far right-wing fringe party. In Great Britain, for example, we have a lot of friends in Great Britain. The Conservative Party, the Tory Party, a lot of British Tories would probably be Democrats. It's a conservative party, but it is not nearly as far right as the Republican Party of the United States. That's also true of the German Christian Democrats. Angela Merkel, who is a conservative, is not nearly as conservative as these Republicans are. So, again, it's a mainstream party in the United States, but it's not in Europe. They are, and even one of our dear friends, 90 years old, is a British Tory. Well, she's aghast at Donald Trump. And that's true across the board. We met with some Scots, I've met with them, that are still in favor of Scottish secession. They think Trump is insane. He's a madman. I can't repeat some of the words that they used for this fellow, but they're words that are familiar on this side of the pond, too, usually four-letter and have Anglo-Saxon roots. But anyway, this is what you're dealing with. And, no man is an island, as someone famous once said. I forgot who said that. But neither is no country. I mean, we need allies. We need allies. We need friends in the world. But, I would bet you money that most Trump supporters think the fact that Europeans don't like him is a good thing, which is just insanity, absolutely insanity. But I would ask these Trump supporters, well, where do you think we can dock our ships? Or where do you think we can park our airplanes in Europe? Trump's comments about NATO are horrifying. And this is what you're dealing with. Again, I pray to the good Lord that on November the 8th, the American people will not elect this guy. But what frightens me, to use a sports analogy, if you get into a championship contest of any kind, NBA Finals, NFL Finals, World Series. If you get in that, you can win it. And that's what scares me. Sports is filled with stories of complete underdogs winning this thing. And that's what frightens me about this election. I wish it were held tomorrow. I think we'd be okay. But it's a long time between now and November. And I think it could be external forces. It could be some terrorist attack, something like that. I think Clinton will shred him in a debate. But again, it could be issues beyond our control. Something, like I said, God forbid, a terrorist attack, something like that.
Well, Barry, I'd be interested in hearing how your friends across the pond have responded to his comments about him. I think Trump called himself Mr. Brexit.
Yes. Even our Tory friend, and we pray for her, by the way, because we would be labor rights. But she was, of course, opposed to Brexit, totally. And I think, and a lot of this Brexit stuff was it's xenophobia, it's nativism, again, it's anti-immigrant. You see that. That's what's driving a lot of this stuff in Europe too. And of course, Trump came out. Of course, it was ironic. Of course, he's not the sharpest tool to shed. Let's be honest. He was up there in Scotland going on about it, and Scotland was a bastion of anti-Brexit.
Well, he was in Scotland actually promoting his golf course,
if I recall correctly. Yeah, right.
And I think he said that Brexit would be good for business for mm-hmm. his golf course.
Yeah, well, which, he did say that.
You know.
He did say it. And that's the absolute insanity of this whole thing. And again, you know, Europeans, and we've been traveling to Europe for years. Now, we're not rich, but when we got married, my wife and I said, look, let's live in a little house and drive old cars and travel all the time. And that's what we've done for years and years and years. And we love to talk to local people, although she does speak German. They always speak back in English, you know. Oh, your German's so good, but let's speak English. Okay. But you talk to people and you find out. And when they see you're an American, they're very interested in American politics. I dare say that Europeans are more interested in American politics than Americans are in European politics. I don't know how many Americans could tell you who the prime minister of various European countries are. But then again, you know, we're the most powerful nation on earth, and naturally, they're interested in it. There's a tremendous amount of goodwill in Europe toward Americans. We've always been welcome everywhere we've gone, and lots of times we've been going to Europe for years, you know, and explain to the Europeans, we don't like Ronald Reagan either, we don't like George Bush either, et cetera. That's one of the things we do, and they want to know that. But again, I cannot emphasize enough the fear and the dread if this guy gets elected. He's utterly incompetent. You know, he's like your right-wing Uncle Joe who doesn't know anything but thinks he does, and that's what makes him dangerous.
Slightly demented Uncle Joe. But unfortunately, we're up at the end of it. Barry Craig, how can we find out more about what you do and how to read your writings?
If you go to our website, the Kentucky State AFL-CIO website, you're welcome to look at it. If you pack a union card, you're welcome to contribute. Just send me an email. It's at bcraig8960@gmail.com. I also write for the LA Progressive, and occasionally I'll get something on the national AFL-CIO website. But again, and I keep stressing, if you pack a union card at Kentucky, let us know what you think. Let us know what you write for us. We're always looking for news and commentary and photographs. So keep those cards and letters rolling in.
Sounds good. We've been speaking with Barry Craig of the Western Kentucky AFL-CIO and the Kentucky Labor Institute. I'm Laura Weens. You've been listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.